Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, June 11th, 2003, and we will be going into public hearing on House Bill 2193. I open the public hearing on House Bill 2193. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 2193 is a bill that is introduced at the request of the department. And it is a bill to, it's basically a cleanup bill to clean up some language in statutes relating to community college district boundary changes and the establishment of new districts. Actually, the department introduced this at least partially at the request of LFO because we were concerned with some of these statutory language that we had there and thought that a cleanup bill would be helpful. If you look under your agenda, you'll see some material that we've distributed here, which includes a copy of the bill, which comes to you from the House Education Committee. The bill we've also included a staff measure summary from the House Education Committee if you'd like to look at that to get information on the vote there and discussion of what that bill does. It's kind of unusual that this bill would even be before Ways and Means. There's no fiscal impact. It is not necessary for the budget, but we've asked the speaker to refer it to Ways and Means because it deals with the emergency board. And Ways and Means, of course, looks at bills that deal with the emergency board. What House Bill 2193 basically does in a nutshell is it removes the emergency board from the process of approving community college district boundary changes. And currently, if there's going to be a change in a community college district boundary, either the full legislature or the emergency board must approve that before the boundary change occurs. There's an information sheet that we've also included that I'm not really planning to go through, but it does have background information on how boundary changes work, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to cover them. House Bill 2193 would change the law so that only the legislature could approve the boundary changes and not the emergency board. The reason behind this bill, or the reason it's before you, is a concern that constitutionally the emergency board does not necessarily have the authority to make these kind of approvals. So we're just trying to clean this up and leave it with the legislature.
Are there any questions or comments on House Bill 2193?
Are there any objections that the opinion that the e-board does not have constitutional authority? Was there any objections to that?
We didn't have any objections to that, and we haven't heard. We're not aware of any objections by community colleges to the bill.
Cam, do you have any interest in commenting on the bill? Are you supportive of the bill? Thank you. Is there any more discussion? Then what I'm going to do is close the work session on House Bill 2193. We have an issue with a quorum on the Senate side, so what we're going to do is kind of stack things up, and then Senator Schrader said he would come in and do all the votes at one time with us. So we'll go back into work session on this bill after we finish working through the community college budget bill. I would like to open an information session on House Bill 5009, which is the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development funding bill. And Mr. Bender, would you take us through what our tasks are going to be today?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to relocate my, restack my materials here. You adjourned yesterday. In the process of considering the LFO recommendations, which are presented to you in a memo dated June 10th that was distributed to you yesterday. And I hope that all of you do have that with you today. I do have an extra copy in case anyone can't find theirs. But we had gotten through the vacancy, or we'd gotten into the vacancy savings adjustments. And the committee was in the process of reviewing the vacant positions. And the LFO recommendations as to continuing or eliminating those vacant positions. So that is to say we are on number 7 in that memo on page 3. And we had gone through yesterday, we had started to go through the vacancy list, which looks like this, and which was also distributed yesterday. And we had discussed position 995, and at that point ran out of time. So now we're up to the next position, which is the second position, 955, which LFO is recommending that this position not be eliminated. And this position, our rationale for this recommendation is that this position, there really isn't a true vacancy here in this situation. What's happened is the department has held this position number vacant because they were anticipating that the Department of Administrative Services was going to require them to reclassify this position. So they didn't want to fill it until that process was complete. But they have hired someone who is double filling another position. And basically, if the reclassification had gone through or had been completed before the date of the vacancy list, this position would not have appeared because they would have taken the double fill and placed that person in the updated classified position. So we view this as simply a situation where because it's taken some time for DAS to get back to the department with the reclassification, this is a vacancy that is a technicality only. And therefore, we don't see a situation where we can eliminate funding or eliminate this position.
Where is this position? I think it's right here.
Oh, okay. You're looking at the page 64.
Is that a base and
it's 955 that we're looking at?
Yeah.
Yes, position 955.
Right there.
What page is it?
Oh, that's 995.
On page 64 is the organization chart. So page position 955 is an program tech 2. I'll find it.
I had the wrong one, circle.
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah. So.
There's 956.
No, I had
956. Oh, that would be it then. Would that be the one that has two people in it? Is 956?
Okay.
Okay, so that would become 955 and 956.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any questions about this position? The question I have is, when is the reclass going to happen?
I can't answer that. Mr. McGee is going to volunteer some information.
Mr. McGee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. This is actually part of a much larger action. Excuse me. DASH Human Resources Services Division is looking at really dozens of administrative classifications and determining if the duties are properly identified, if the minimum qualifications are appropriately correct. And over a period of time, they are eliminating old classifications and establishing new ones. I think the process has taken longer than we anticipated it was going to do. The program technician series is one that's being reviewed. It's still in the process. I don't know when that classification review process will complete. We probably should have told the department to go ahead and just fill the existing classification because we were taking longer than we thought. So I can find out if we have a projected time to complete this particular class for the review. But
So in the meantime, do they just continue with a double-filled position, or will we, by virtue of this, be creating another position, or will we just be giving them permission to double-fill?
We would not be eliminating the position authority that exists in their budget that they would be using after the reclassification. So that authority, they would be able to put that person essentially into a position that's in the budget and budgeted for.
And in terms of the reclassification impacting the pay scale, what are the issues there?
I can't answer that, I'm afraid.
Madam Chair, that will really be the result of what the analysis of the class is and where it's determined that it fits. Most often we attempt to either self-finance those or we come back to the legislature and talk to you about the difficulties of doing that. So, again, it depends on when the review is complete. But it could come in as a higher or lower salary range.
Thank you. Cam, can you come forward and tell us what this person does or what each of these positions do if they do the same thing?
Good morning. For the record, Cam Preuss-Brawley with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The positions that we're speaking of that are program tech twos are primarily individuals who provide technical assistance and monitoring and other services for the pass-through funds, primarily on for federal dollars, either workforce or adult basic ed. But these positions, as at least I understand them, are for the Federal Workforce Investment Act. And we have individuals that are responsible for geographic areas across the state to ensure that the program design and delivery and performance and finances and everything of that area are meeting and maintaining the plan that we have with the Department of Labor.
So the funding stream is federal dollars?
That is correct.
They're 100% federally funded?
That is correct.
Anyone else have any questions?
Mm-mm.
Let's go ahead and talk about the next position then.
Just to remind the committee, the next two positions we have already discussed. The third position there has already been filled, as is indicated. The fourth position, which is shaded, you did vote yesterday to eliminate, which was the LFO recommendation as well. Then you'll see the next four positions below the top shaded line and continuing to the second shaded line. Those four are new positions that would be established under package 103. And if the committee's indulgence, I would like to just defer that to the discussion of that particular package.
Okay.
So then you have one position left on the first page and three positions on the second page. These are the ones that we'll continue to go through. These, again, are four vacant positions that currently exist, and we are recommending in all four cases that you do not eliminate them. And let me explain what these positions are. The first position, which is the one on the bottom of page one, is the Assistant Commissioner for Programs position. This is one of two Assistant Commissioner positions. There is, the Commissioner who is sitting before you, and then a Assistant Commissioner for Programs and an Assistant Commissioner for Budget and Finance. Mm-hmm. And this is clearly one of the primary administrative positions in the department, and we do believe that the department will need to fill this position, and we do not recommend that it be eliminated. I do want to point out one thing. These are recent retirements. This position plus the subsequent three that we're going to be looking at. In fact, the last one you can see was only vacant for 1 week, and maybe up to 2 weeks by now since this was printed. But these are people who are retiring now. As you know, there are a lot of retirements in state government at this point. And the LFO recommendation is going to be to continue all of these positions, but we do have in our recommendation that because in most cases these are people with long tenure and they were at the top of the pay scales, when they're continued, our recommendation is to fund them back at the lower step two And you'll see in the recommendation that this will save considerable funding, even though the positions themselves aren't eliminated. But we'll get to that in here. But just not.
Your rationale for funding these positions at the lower level, what type of qualified people will you attract at that pay scale?
Well, I think that it would be, you know, clearly the less the salary is, the more difficult it will be to attract the candidates that and the employees that the department wishes to.
Can Cam answer that?
Well, she did.
Cam, could you address that?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I think as Steve was explaining, it will likely narrow the pool of people who will consider the positions because if you are contained, if there is no flexibility to start at step two, but we understand the rationale.
Well, you say this is a major leadership position. Just how important is it? I have a little bit of concern. You know, I'm trying to whack these budgets as much as I can, but in this particular position where you say it's a deputy commissioner and with what they're charged with and the other deputy commissioner, I have some concerns and reservations about the funding of this position to try to draw as qualified people as we possibly can. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's, you know, some...
I would think, Representative Smith, that it would be reasonable to have an expectation that you wouldn't be hiring people for these jobs at the top of the salary scale.
Well, I agree with that. You would not hire these because these people previously have been there, have served for a long time, and have earned that salary and have a large knowledge base. But by the same token, we need qualified people to enter these jobs.
Have any of the people that are vacating these positions expressed an interest in coming back on a rehire type basis?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we currently do have the retirees all working on temporary status. And we are in conversation and evaluation of what work we think needs to continue that they have the expert knowledge base to help us with. So I would expect that we would continue, at least in some fashion, work with these individuals.
Madam Chair.
Senator Massey.
Thank you. I was going to ask a question related to that. And you've identified it even better for me, Cam, because my concern is that when we hire back, and not just this department, but all of them, and we've dealt with this before, when you hire back the people that have retired, eventually you're reducing the pool of bringing people up and the depth of the organization. Mm-hmm. So could you expand, Cam, how long you're going to continue this policy of hiring back the retirees, and what are your long-range plans for bringing staff and bringing people up through the organization?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Meserle, it's a very good question. We are evaluating, given that we think four retirements is a pretty large number, evaluating what efficiencies we might make by restructuring the work, but it is our intention to refill those positions, and this is a temporary. I would not expect that it would last more than 6 to 9 months, depending on the individual and the expertise that they bring to that particular job. But we are not actively pursuing these retirees to these vacant positions because of retirement at this moment.
Representative Smith, just for clarification, the LFO recommendation doesn't recommend, in my understanding, changing the classification of the job. It only recommends stepping down on within that classification on the pay scale.
That's fine.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that for the record.
Can you show us where on the org chart these folks are? I've easily located the principal executive manager. That's the assistant commissioner for programs.
Ah. Oh, there it is. Is that a 994?
This is the first one.
The 164s. Okay. 164 is in the 1, 2, 3, fourth column for the left, second position down. Basic skills and literacy director. 962 is in the second column from the left, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth box down. An accounting.
212 is in the underneath the assistant commissioner program by two.
Okay. Did you have any more to add on these positions?
Not particularly, unless there were any questions. In terms of the funding of these positions, just to clarify that, because it's not, that's not obvious from the looking at the organization chart. The positions are as follows. If you do look at the organization chart, which I believe you've probably located these four positions, for the position number 994, which is the assistant commissioner position, in that particular case, their salary is 51% general fund and 49% federal funds. So that position has general fund in it. For the position two, if you go down to, and you look at the education program specialist position, which is number 212, in that case, that position is actually 100% general fund. If you look to the left of that, the basic skills and literacy director, which is position 164, that position is zero general fund, and it is split between the Perkins funds and the federal fund, the other federal funds. And finally, if you go down to the left to the accounting technician 3 position, which is position 212, that position is also a general fund.
You mean position 962, not 212?
Oh, I'm sorry. Where is 212? Oh, okay. Yes, position 962, I'm sorry.
That's what again?
Position 962 is entirely federally funded.
Okay.
Our recommendation, which is shown on page 3, number 7, recommendation 7, the second paragraph of that, the first paragraph was relating to the position that we were recommending be eliminated. For the ones we recommend to continue, those 6 positions, we recommend that they be carried forward, but that the funding for these positions be reduced to step 2 for all of them except the double fill one. Given the net impact of these changes at the lower level, we would recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriation in the office operations program area by $110,832. And the reductions that come from the other and federal funds, which are $22,008 and $81,527 respectively, that those also be reduced from office operations, but then transferred to the federal other support program area so that the additional funds can be moved out to the local areas for service, to provide services.
Questions or comments? Objections? We are again in a place where we can't take action on this, but we will store these things up and get Senator Schrader in here. Let's proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. We're now on recommendation 8 from the memo, which relates to compensation increases. The co-chairs have directed that their budget cannot support any increases in salary, wages, or benefits during the 2003-05 biennium. The governor's budget, as it comes to you, though, does have funds to cover the merit increases for the employees of the state agency. We now know that those merit increases are not going to be awarded during the 2003-05 biennium, so we are recommending that you remove the funds that are in the budget to finance them. We've gone through and we've calculated what was in there for this purpose, and our recommendation, which is shown mostly in bold on page 4, is that you reduce the general fund appropriation in the office operations program area by $10,697, and that you transfer $45,135 of other funds expenditure limitation and $20,947 of federal funds expenditure limitation from the office operations program area to the federal other support program area. Again, this is a co-chair's adjustment that is being done in every budget. We also recommend that because of the way the budget is set up, the Youth Conservation Corps is a little bit different. They have their operations and their special payments in the same program area there, but we're recommending, again, their merit increases not be funded. So we recommend that you approve the transfer of $25,824 of other funds expenditure limitation in the Youth Conservation Corps program area from personal services to special payments, so that, again, the money that's saved by not financing the increases could then be used to support the youth crews.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation for the reductions in salary increases? Let's go ahead then and talk about the budget footnote,
okay,
which is pretty self-explanatory.
Okay. What we just talked about were the state agency employees. The rest of this deals with the actual community college employees who are not state employees. They are employees of the independent community college districts. Therefore, the state doesn't determine what the compensation rates are at the community colleges, but the co-chair's expectation is that their budget is not financing salary, wage, and benefit increases of employees that are being supported by state public funds. So we recommend the following. We recommend that you clarify that intention and that you include a budget note or approve a budget note that says the adopted budget does not support any increases in salary, wages, or benefits for community college employees during the 2003-05 biennium, and the subcommittee expects no such increases to be awarded.
Comments or questions or objections to the proposed budget note? Did you have anyone that was wanting to comment on this budget move? Were you yourself wishing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, indeed, I have asked President Gretchen Schuette to provide a comment on this particular budget note, and I would like to as well recognize the impetus for such a note, but wanted to make sure that I have on the record that I currently do not have, nor does the State Board of Education, the authority to enforce such a budget note.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, Gretchen Schuette, President of Chemeketa Community College. Very nice to see you all. Kim asked me to comment briefly on the difficulties of working with employee groups and contracts in the context of a budget note that asks for holding salaries and benefits in line. And many colleges, of course, do have current contracts in place. Some colleges have open contracts and currently in negotiations and want to do that negotiations in good faith. I just would describe the Shemeketa situation even before the governor's call to limit increases. Our own assessment of the mismatch between expected revenues and our costs suggested that we should begin a process of discussion with our employee groups, although none of our contracts were open. So we did do that, but we began over a year ago to talk with those employee groups, and we have good relations with our employee groups, and each of those groups has multiple year contracts. And we worked hard on those contracts. Administrations before mine worked hard on those contracts, which were in place, and we also worked on contracts only a year before feeling this need to address the mismatch of costs and revenues. Before we even really got traction in those conversations, we reduced our programs and services by $3 million. We also committed to using $2 million of our rainy day fund, and in addition, adjusted our tuition and fees by a significant amount, putting some of the burden of bridging that gap on students. So then we worked over many months to work on mutual agreements, which we did achieve, and have all employee groups have agreed to forego the cost of living increases at the Shemeketa Community College for this coming year. And we came to those agreements in time to propose a budget to the budget committee that is a balanced budget. As recently as this week and in continuing weeks, we will continue to talk with our employee groups about the 04-05 budget as we get more information about what the mismatch might be there. But it was a long process, a difficult process, a fruitful process, but did require a lot of effort to achieve a balanced budget. So I just wanted to characterize the challenge of working within contracts which are not open.
Well, and if I might reply to your comments, I very much appreciate the work that you're doing. We don't take any glee in doing this at all, and this is very difficult. It is more difficult for you because you're looking at those people who are going to be not getting the increases in salary that they expected to get. We have a huge issue here around equity because we are going to also budget for the agencies that we do have the ability to budget for no increases in salaries and benefits too. And so it casts us in a very awkward position to treat different parts of the budget differently from other parts. But that doesn't diminish the sacrifice that is being required of people to help us share the burden here. And we fully acknowledge it. And you have, I think, our gratitude for the hard work that you're doing to make it work in the state of Oregon in these difficult times.
Thank you, Madam Chair. People do work very, very hard at community colleges. And we really do want to have positive compensation packages for people because they do work so very hard.
And I think that all of us are eagerly awaiting the time when we can get back into that fiscal situation.
I cheer that notion.
Just a quick question.
Representative Smith.
What kind of benefit packages do your employees have? Are they the same across the board for the instructors as well as support staff? Or?
Yes, our benefit packages are virtually the same for all employee groups.
Retirement and health benefits?
Very much the same. There are some small differences, but pretty much the same. We try to approach the discussions as a whole group. So in achieving some deceleration in the cost of health benefits, for example, we formed a task force of representatives of all employee groups.
Representative March.
Given that you are responsible to an independently elected board in answer to them, do you feel this budget note interferes with your ability to negotiate fair labor agreements?
I honestly don't quite know how it could be implemented at Shemeketa. The locally elected board really sees this as a key responsibility and charges the administration to work with them on securing contracts with our individual employee groups. There's a strong commitment to to local control, to use that catchphrase.
Thank you.
Further comments? Thank you very much. I appreciate what you just told us. Mr. Bender, could we go on to a discussion on the self-improvement classes?
Yes. Later, we will be talking a bit briefly about what's in the co-chair's budget or the changes the co-chair's budget has for community colleges compared to what the governor's balanced budget had. But I do want to stress that this particular budget note is really independent of that discussion. And it deals with certain types of self-improvement courses or classes that are or have been eligible for funding under the Community College Support Fund distribution. Just a little bit of history. During the 2002 special legislative sessions, the legislature identified a set of these self-improvement classes and indicated that funding for them was to be, in terms of state funds, was to be reduced. The set of self-improvement classes that were identified were ones that are not health, safety, or workforce related. Because of the state's budget situation and the fact that funds are so limited, we're recommending that you approve the following budget note, which basically directs colleges to finance these types of self-improvement courses, which are not health, safety, or workforce-related content, out of their tuition and fees, and not to use any general fund that the state is appropriating to the colleges. So the budget note would say the adopted budget does not include general fund support for self-improvement classes that are not health, safety, or workforce-related in content. Community colleges are to support the costs of offering such classes entirely from the tuition and fees charged to enroll in such classes.
Mr. Bender, do we have a list that came out of that interim work group of how the classes are classified?
I haven't seen a complete list, though I think the department went through a very extensive review when the legislature approved the reduction in special session to categorize classes at the various community colleges. I probably could get something to distribute to you.
Could you make that available to us?
Madam Chair, yes. It was a handout during our regular session and was attached to the April 21st, 2003 response to questions. We did not go through it in any lengthy detail.
I know, it's like
I was reluctant to say, but
April what?
April 21st. It was attachment B.
B? D?
B as in boy, to the letter of April 21st.
I have an April 22nd.
I'm not sure. I have a list of community college tax burdens.
What about the letter from April, this letter of April 21st, 2003? Whereabouts is it there?
Attachment A is the affirmative action commitments and target.
Oh, right, I have that.
Attachment B is other education reimbursable categories.
Must be a.
It's all stapled to, at least my copy is all stapled together.
This? Is it?
Oh, that's a different.
That's my cover letter, same.
Uh-huh. So
where
is attachment B?
Oh, I see. There were two letters from that date. That's
two
the
letters.
Yeah. Okay. Here.
You have to understand, we die in paper. Well, we have no idea where it's.
Different letter. Yeah.
Two letters from the 21st.
Okay.
Same with my stuff.
Or I can actually, I can get someone in my office to copy and bring them in.
Okay.
That might be better.
Can we keep that then and make a copy from it?
Well, I have a one that I can.
Oh, you have it.
Okay. Yeah, let me.
Get some volunteer to run down the hallway.
Yes. I'll make a quick call.
I have nothing. I have lost it. It's much more likely.
Unless I have it back here.
Never look at it again. The one you missed it. The one you
did. Did she say April 21st?
Yeah, there's two letters from April 21st. I only got one of them.
I think I have it.
You get points for that. You get points for that.
I found mine.
Aha!
In the back. Do I get extra points for that, Chair?
Absolutely. She should award you bonus points for that.
Well, except for the other times when I don't do so well.
Wait a minute.
You got it, too.
Oh, my God. I might get bonus points, too.
Okay. See, I told you we just dying paper up here. We don't know what was given at what time. Here we go.
We can obviously only handle one letter a day. Whoever sends more than one letter a day, Cam.
Never again.
Does everyone have one now? Or
I think with you. Do you have one? Senator Nesley and I.
21st. Okay.
Yeah. Oregon State Board of Education. Mine was in the back, and my thing in the back.
Can we go forward and come back to this item?
Well, actually, I'm satisfied. I think if we use the designations on this list the way that we have in the budget note, that we're sufficiently clear. And I would just like to get on the record that we are referencing the work that was done in the interim by the group within your shop to delineate these classes. Is there any further discussion on the wording of the budget note? You're fine? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm fine on the budget note, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Him too.
Representative Bates is getting close to the end of the...
Would a question?
Question.
Does this mean these courses won't be offered? Cam.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think I have to say yes, no, to respond to your question. I believe some of them will not be able to be self-supporting, and therefore they will not be offered. But a good many of them will be able to recoup the charges.
Okay.
Representative Bates?
Madam Chair, I'm just reading this very quickly. On attachment B, the last group, non-credit arts and sciences, are these going to be funded with general fund money?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates says, I understand the proposed budget note. The answer is no. Only those that are on the front page, which are workforce or health and safety related.
Thank you. Madam Chair, that I have no problem.
Okay. And so there are no objections to going ahead with the budget note?
Did anyone else need a copy? Or?
I don't.
And I believe we're ready to go on and talk about Package 103.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. The next three recommendations relate to three policy option packages in the Governor's balanced budget proposal. policy option packages are packages typically to either add or delete programs that exist that the agency has already been financing. Policy option package 103, which is referred to in recommendation number 10, is a package that would add four new full-time positions, three of which would be funded using federal funds, and the fourth, which would be funded using other funds. These are the Perkins funds, which are really federally sourced. So in some sense, all four are really being supported by funds that come from the federal government. What this package does is it establishes these positions in the governor's budget, but it does not add any expenditure limitation to pay for these people, which is pretty unusual. Usually when you have new people, there are costs, additional costs involved, so you have to account for that in the budget. The reason, though, why this package adds the positions without adding any expenditures for them is, well, that at least for three of the positions, they really are already people who are already there. And they are now being financed out of services and supply, money that's appropriated for service, that's allowed in the budget for services and supplies. And what package 103 does is it formally establishes the positions as permanent positions, and it shifts the funding out of the services and supplies and into the personal services area of the budget. In that sense, you can say it is making the budget more accurately reflect what is going on. The question, though, is why are there now three positions that are not in the budget and that are not being financed, or that are being financed out of services and supplies? And the reason for that is that a number of responsibilities relating to staffing of the Workforce Investment Board were moved to the department during this biennium. And what the department did was, they, with DAS's approval, they established three limited duration positions in order to cover these additional responsibilities. This is something that departments are allowed to do. They are allowed to establish, if DAS approves, a limited duration position as long as those positions can be self-financed by money that's already in the budget. So they used services and money that they had in the budget for services and supplies, switched them for these three positions, and got them on a limited duration basis. If you approve package 103, then what you would be doing is you would be establishing these as permanent positions, and you would be shifting the funding to reflect how the expenditures are being used. We do, and these positions are actually identified back on this vacancy list, because this vacancy list includes newly established positions that technically are still vacant because you haven't approved them yet. These are the three positions between the two shaded in rows on the front page. And if you look at these three positions, you'll see that one of them is a position which serves as executive staff to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and that what this person does is they work with the State Workforce Investment Board, staff that board, and staff, work with the a liaison between the state board and the local workforce investment boards. The second of the three positions serves as the staff of the Workforce Investment Board's Youth Committee, and the third serves in a position where they work with the federal agency, Department of Labor, regarding performance reporting and analysis, and they also assist the department in interpreting and implementing
federal regulations related to the Workforce Investment Act. All three of these positions are financed by the federal funds, and LFO does recommend that you allow these positions to be established to reflect what's going on in the agency already. The fourth position, which Package 103 would establish, is actually somewhat different from these other three in that there isn't actually a position there currently that was established on a limited duration position. This was just a position that the department is requesting to help to be financed from the Carl Perkins funds to help the that program out at the department level. As you know, the Carl Perkins funds support the development of professional technical education programs, and the department feels that they need additional assistance here in working with these programs. You may recall also that when you heard testimony in public hearing that because of budget constraints at the community colleges themselves, many of these professional technical programs, which are some of the most expensive to offer, are under a lot of financial stress, and colleges are continually reviewing whether they continue to offer them. I think in this environment, the department was asking for an additional staff person. However, we are recommending that you do not establish that fourth position. We do believe that in these tight budget times, we need to look very closely at the new positions being created, and we are instead recommending that the department work with the state Oregon ODE, the Oregon Department of Education, which shares in the Perkins responsibilities, to see if they can come to an agreement to use more of the existing staff time on community college issues as opposed to the K-12 issues. So we're hoping that they will be able to come to an agreement to help reallocate existing staff to better address these issues as opposed to adding a new staff person here.
Mr. Bender, can you give us some insight into how there could be enough excess money in the services and supplies budget to fund three positions?
It is a significant amount of money, and let's see, I'm just looking here at my recommendation number 10. We're talking about $135,050. I don't have that number right there. It is actually, to be totally honest to me, quite a surprise that there is that there had been that much money in services and supplies that could be transferred. I think we work to get these budgets to reflect what's going on as best as possible, and I do think that this package would at least help do that from this point forward.
Cam, could you give us any insight into how you ended up having enough money in your services and supplies budget in this area to cover three positions?
Madam Chair, if I'm totally honest, the answer would be no. But I would like to ask, and this is very unfortunate, Brett, perhaps you can help.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brett West, Assistant Commissioner for Community Colleges. A good part of the money came from the professional services line item because we did send some of the money in past biennia to the governor's office to pay for staffing for OWID because it was done down there. That would be...
So let me just make sure that I'm getting it clear. You had funded positions from your services and supply budget for quite some time?
Madam Chair, not for quite some time. I think for two biennia prior to the one we're currently in, if I remember correctly, because the OWIB used to be staffed out of the governor's office prior to the establishment of this limited duration position. So the professional services line item that shows up in services and supplies was actually used to send to the governor's office to pay for the position, plus another support staff, which does not show up on here. So that's where a good deal of the money was in our past budgets.
Do you have anyone at the current time beside you have what I'm trying to get at is who else are you paying through your services and supplies budget?
Madam Chair, we only have the contract that Cam talked about yesterday for the IS-5 position. We have that one paid for out of the services and supplies as we held the position vacant. And I believe we have no others, as I recall at the moment, that we pay for.
Do you believe that or do you know that?
I am 98% sure, sitting here right now, not having researched the question ahead of time. We used to have more in the past, but we made a very purposeful effort to bring all functions in-house through either limited duration appointments or by restructuring some of our work. So the contract that we talked about yesterday was one, and then bringing this OWIP staff back into the office would leave us with that one.
I would very much appreciate if you would become 100% certain one way or the other and inform Mr. Bender.
I certainly will, Madam Chair.
Further questions?
Yes.
Representative Bates?
Just a couple quick questions. Steve, if federal funds go away for these three positions, do we have some way of being aware of that and then looking at it at a later time? It doesn't become a general fund situation, it stays federal funds?
These positions, if federal funds were not available, these positions, the department would not have authority to use general fund to support these positions. So.
The other question I have about these positions, looking at the kind of work they're doing, I wonder if these positions are helpful in maintaining those federal funds, that some of it's reporting back to the federal government. Is there a maintenance effort here or reporting that's required to maintain federal funds? Is that part of the reason we do this?
I don't believe that there is that direct relationship. Perhaps the commissioner can comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, if I understand your question, Federal Workforce Investment Act does require that there be a statewide board and that there be youth councils. And in order to provide appropriate staff, it is currently a 43-member board. And in order to sustain that level of membership and activity does require this level of staffing. The other positions help bring not just the community colleges and workforce development, but as well the employment department and the Department of Human Services. The money that we receive under the Workforce Investment Act is, as you might recall, known as the one-stop career center funds. The one-stop career center funds has 14 mandatory partners. Not all of them are funded through the Department of Labor, but the Department of Labor is expected, and we as their agent in this state are expected to bring all of those activities together. So in that way, there is a bit of a direct relationship between the performance and the WIA liaison, the youth staff, and the statewide board staff to ensure that we are in communication and following the structure of the federal law.
Yeah, pretty much my experience in federal programs is if you don't have documentation of how you're spending the money and they come back and look at it with you, you could be in serious trouble. And I've seen programs get in serious trouble and fines, penalties, and want the money back kind of thing happening. People doing the job, but they didn't have documentation. So I assume that's what we're getting to here. A lot of this is documentation. The money was spent the way it's supposed to be spent under the federal guidelines. And that can be pretty onerous, but you have to do it very carefully or you can be in trouble. Is that a correct assumption on my part?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes. We think the regulations are thicker than the Act, and the financial piece is the thickest part of that.
Well, that's my perception. That's what these positions to a great degree probably do. Thank you.
Are there any oversight functions within the Employment Department?
Madam Chair, I think I need more of a question to adequately respond.
What I'm curious about is that I'm not real clear on whether this is all of the oversight for the Workforce Investment Program or whether the other agencies that are players in the program also have oversight functions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Additional words. The answer is yes. You know, the Employment Department does have responsibility for the delivery of what is known as Title III of the Workforce Investment Act, and that's also known as Wagner-Peiser. So we have actually, the governor has designated the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and the Employment Department as co-entities in the delivery of one-stop career center services in the state. So, but they have very particular responsibilities around Wagner-Peiser.
So what I'm hearing you say then that is that the functions within the community colleges departments and the functions within the employment department are discrete enough that there wouldn't be any overlap in what people are doing here?
Madam Chair, the overlap is seen as collaboration and integration rather than as any kind of friction between the agencies, but we do have to collaborate because the community colleges and workforce development provide only a piece of the services that make up workforce services.
Okay, but what I'm getting at here is you've got three positions that are involved in oversight, so they're obviously collecting information and checking it against some kind of parameters that you have to stay within. The question that I have is that function also occurring in the employment department? I'm looking for the possibility or probability here that people are doing the same things at different levels.
Madam Chair, again, thank you for your indulgence to understand your question. The answer is no. These particular positions have more of a statewide purview with some title, what is called Title I-B of the Workforce Investment Act responsibilities. And the Employment Department would have discrete responsibilities and oversight for the Title III, as I earlier spoke. So there is collaboration to ensure that we are actually delivering the programs in tandem, but there is, I would say, little duplication of that oversight service.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? We have a little sideboard conference going on.
Maybe, Madam Chair.
Are there Representative March? Go ahead.
The education specialist position that we're looking at not approving. How big of a hole is that going to leave? Where are you?
Madam Chair, Representative March, because it does not exist, it will not be the same kind of hole as these others because we currently are expected to provide it. It was our fervent hope to have additional capacity within the department around professional technical programs, but I do understand the LFO's request that we work more closely with the Department of Ed, and I do believe that there are new and emerging opportunities in that arena that weren't there in the most recent past.
Thank you.
Are there any objections to the LFO recommendations to the agency operations in Package 103? Okay, let's go ahead and move on then to transfer of Even Start.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We haven't talked very much about Even Start program during the public hearings or in the discussion of this budget, and that's primarily because it doesn't. There's no funding for this program anymore in the 03-05 biennial budget. Even Start is a federally funded program, and it funds family-centered literacy programs that target both children and parents. So and it targets households where the parents have literacy problems and this is their concerns that this may continue on to their children. This is a program that has traditionally been financed through the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, but there's a package in this budget, Package 105, which eliminates that funding and program. There's a comparable or parallel package in the Department of Education's budget, because what's happening is they are transferring the program from community colleges to ODE in order to better conform with changes adopted that the feds adopted in the No Child Left Behind Act. So Package 105 would remove the funding for the Even Start Family Literacy Program from the department budget, and we recommend its approval.
Discussion? Questions?
No.
Representative Smith?
No, I don't. I'm fine.
Objections? Let's continue on then to the Non-Limit Expenditure Authority for National Emergency Grants.
Package 106 would allow monies that are received under the National Emergency Grants Program to be spent on a non-limited basis. As you recall, the National Emergency Grant Program is the one where, when there are mass layoff situations, the department may apply for additional funds in order to address workforce training needs in those situations. Because these are grants that never have a state match required, and because we don't know or can't really predict what the expenditures will be, and also because we would like to allow the department to apply and spend these monies as quickly as they're able to get them, the governor has recommended, and we concur with their recommendation, that these expenditures be made non-limited, which means that although they'll be reported, they don't have to count them. We're not going to stop them from spending any grant money that they may receive.
Mm-hmm. Questions or comments?
Mm-mm.
Objections? Let's go ahead then and talk about Mohawk Community College's facility funds.
Okay. This is an item that's not in the governor's budget, and it deals with the following. In 1999, the state provided $200,000 of general fund to Mount Hood Community College in order for them to renovate a facility in Troutdale. They had plans at that time. They had identified a facility that they wished to offer programs in. It's turned out subsequent to that that they've discovered that that particular facility was not suitable, and they have now they have no intentions of trying to of planning to use that particular facility. But what this means is that the $200,000, which the state distributed to them in 1999, is now on Mount Hood Community College's books. They have the funds, but they are restricted by law to only spending them for a facility in Troutdale, and there is no facility in Troutdale that they want to spend these monies on. So there's $200,000 out there that can't be used under current law. The college has reviewed its facility plans and has identified an alternative facility that they would like to use that is located in Gresham. And because of that, you will see attached immediately behind the recommendation on the next page a copy of the House Bill 5009-1 amendments. What these amendments do is they have a lot of language because they have to, Legislative Council shows the entire section that's being amended. But the real change, for example, on page 1 is on line 19. You can see this is changing the law so that those funds which have already been distributed can now be used for a Gresham facility instead of the one in Troutdale. There's a similar change on page 2, line 9. Those $200,000 together are the $200,000 that I was referring to.
Questions or comments?
No.
Representative March.
If this was not approved, we would have then $200,000 more in general fund that would be available for other purposes?
If this were not approved, then the $200,000 was actually distributed to Mount Hood Community College
back in 1999. So we do not have it. It would not come back to the state as it has not until this time. It would remain with Mount Hood, and they would still be restricted to using it only for a facility in Troutdale.
Could it be modified to be part of their general fund support?
That could be done with, if you adopted these amendments and then essentially reduced their community college support amount by $200,000, that would be the effect would be exactly what you're discussing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a, how does this work? Is there a point where they're required to return the money to the department?
We do not believe that they are required to do that, and they could do that, or you could probably pass a law to make them do that. But my understanding is under current law, they have that money, it's been distributed, but they have to use it only for the purposes for which it was distributed to them.
Madam Chair, I have a
follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Do we have any information as to what funds are going to be spent for in Gresham? I assume there was quite a presentation last session on what the use of the funds would be in Troutdale, but I have no information in my file.
Is there a representative from Mount Hood Community College here? Yes, Bob.
Madam Chair, yes, it's President Bob Silverman from Mount Hood Community College.
We were flush. You know, we're not flush today.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Silverman, Robert Silverman, President of Mount Hood Community College. Is there a question I can answer?
Senator Messerly.
Yes. Could you identify for us what the funds will be used for at the Gresham campus?
The Gresham site is called the Center for Advanced Learning. It's a charter school with five school districts. And the five school districts have built a building. And in that building, they have all contributed bond money to creating a Center for Advanced Learning dedicated for high school students to come from all five districts and be trained in allied health, information technology, manufacturing technologies. And they had planned the building to incorporate the local cable television station. The local cable television station backed out just recently, and that released about 15,000 square feet of building in downtown Gresham next to the Max. And our intention, or our thought, is that we would be able to then create, with the $200,000, we already have a donation of over $600,000. We're looking for about $3 million to put this together as a nursing effort to at least double, hopefully triple, the number of nurses we're going to be training. The money being used in Gresham then would be a capstone or an enhancement to a high school program. We also have agreements with OHSU, if this all comes to pass or when it all comes to pass, that we will be bringing the four-year bachelor's degree in nursing also to the Gresham site. So it's an opportunity that arose for us to participate as active members in this educational effort. The property, the land, the building have all been built, and it just needs to be remodeled inside for us. The money was dedicated in 1999 to remodeling a facility that was being donated to the college by the Corps of Engineers. It was a building that used to be a manufacturing or machine shop at the airport. It turned out that we have not received in all these years the title to the building because they've not been able to remediate the building for environmental waste and hazards. Most recently, we were supposed to get it last summer, and they found PCBs, and they have now entered into trying to remediate the building, and we have no knowledge, or they've not told us that we'll ever receive title because of the damage to the environment of that building. So the money has been transferred to the college. It is in the bank, and we've been waiting for the Troutdale project to work, and our board has committed to not back off of Troutdale, but there's no intent that we would ever get the building now or it will be able to be used, whereas the Center for Advanced Learning and the expansion of the nursing program have become a very high priority of our board. This money is in the bank, and we would like to be able to use it for the support of that nursing program.
All right, Madam Chair. So the money will be used to remodel the advanced learning facility, which will also allow for the expanded nursing program?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
I'm satisfied with the explanation.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on the dash ones? Is there any objections to the dash ones? What we have left to discuss then, in my understanding, is the performance measures.
That's correct.
So I'm going to go next. Mr. Bender, before we discuss the performance measures, Senator Meserle has some clarification that he wishes to offer on some information that he's requesting in relation to the budget note proposal. Senator Meserle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a very productive meeting with CAM last night, and so I'd like to get on the record and maybe clarify some questions that I've had following that meeting. I understand that there is a task force that the department has put together to review the formula, and they've been working for, I forget the exact number, 4 to 6 months or something like that. Is that right, Ken? Could you tell me the makeup of that task force?
Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, I certainly could. There are representatives from, I believe, 6 colleges. Would you like me to name them?
Please, yes.
President Jess Carrion from Portland Community College. President Travis Kirkland from Blue Mountain Community College. President Bob Barber from Central Oregon Community College. President Wes Channel from Klamath Falls Community College. President Joe Johnson from Clackamas Community College, and President Mary Spieldy from Lane Community College. I also serve on that task force.
And Madam Chair, if I could indulge the committee, I guess. We had this printout some time back about how the formula works, or about the results of the formula, I should say. But it's unclear to me exactly how this formula works. And my concerns are, quite frankly, if I can find my notes, that, as an example, how does the formula work? I know Portland was a huge gainer in the last biennium, from the last biennium to this biennium. And there's other smaller community colleges who had very little tax income who lost. So I know there must be the tax basis must be a piece of this, and I assume that enrollment is a piece that goes into the formula, and I'd just like if someone can walk us through that so we understand how that formula is put together.
Senator Meserle, if I might just interject, would it be reasonable, we're going to need to have another session on this budget because we haven't yet gone to the things that we need to review. Mm-hmm. Would it be reasonable to allow the department to make a presentation on that in the next session?
That's fine. Do we know when?
Not legislate, the next time this committee
right.
meets.
Oh, boy. Do we have any idea when that will be?
We have not scheduled any additional meetings. If you would like, you could schedule this to be tomorrow. You have 2 bills on your agenda for tomorrow. It shouldn't take that much time.
But I don't anticipate that they will take very long. Right. So if that would be amenable to you, if you could have the presentation ready in that by tomorrow, we could do this tomorrow.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to follow up with Senator Meserle to ensure that I know exactly the pieces of paper he's referring to. So,
would that meet your needs, Senator?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have anything else that you were wanting
to discuss?
Fine
for now.
Please, I would very much urge you to get together and make sure that the senator gets the information that he needs. And let's go on to a discussion of the performance measures. And committee members, I have put a call in to Senator Schrader, so on senator time, he should be showing up here. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For your convenience, we've copied the agency performance measures to the back of the June 10th memo. So if you look there, you'll see, starting immediately after the Dash 1 amendment, the list of the agency performance measures. Part of the process this biennium is for you to review these and to indicate to the agency whether you have any concerns or ask them to change any of their performance measures. So I'm looking at the page now that is labeled page 36, because if you went back to their actual budget book, you would see that's where it is. But these are related to various agency goals. And the first set of performance measures are related to the goal of literacy and the role that the department has in promoting literacy statewide. You can see that they have performance measures relating to the number of GED certificates, GED is their program, to the percentages of at-risk youth who are enrolled in high school or in some type of high school equivalency program, the number of students completing levels of basic skills or English as a second language, and the number of students who successfully complete community college courses in word processing and or spreadsheet software. What this is, these are four performance measures. You can see their 2000 values and the 2005 targets. I know there were some discussions when you looked at this during public hearings, for example. There was a decline in the number of GEDs. The targeted number is actually less than the existing number. Just to move ahead just for a minute to show you the type of information that you have here, if you flip ahead to what is labeled page 38, what you see there is some data and some, basically, it's more information that has been summarized on the previous sheet that we had been referring to earlier. So I wanted to point out those particular performance measures and see if there were any comments from members or questions related to them.
Questions or comments? Representative Bates, we're taking a look at performance measures. So this is your...
Mine, I'm not doing too well this morning, so my performance measures don't look good.
Madam Chair?
Representative March.
I notice a number of these are numeric, which is sort of the lowest form of a performance measure. And what would be perhaps more beneficial is an indication of true performance. For example, number of GED certificates issued annually, a performance measure would be percentage of people passing a GED from those taken. So it's nice to know the numbers, but mm-hmm. We don't know if the training is successful, you know, that sort of thing. So a pure numeric doesn't give you any kind of quality of the performance.
That's a very good point. Would it be possible, Mr. Bender, for us to put some additional language in here that says that we would also like the certificate, the GED certificate information to be reported as a percentage of total tests taken?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ESL level, again, same thing. I mean, we don't know how many are taking the ESL, so the number completing doesn't it doesn't give us any kind of ratio of sense of quality.
Perhaps we could make some kind of a blanket recommendation here that for performance measures that measure completion rates, that we also have included in it the data that it shows us how many people were enrolled in the programs.
I think that would be an excellent addition.
I think so, too.
It may be helpful just to ask the agency if they have any comment on that and see any problem with implementing that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think this is an excellent question because you're exactly right. The value without the underlying information or process to the outcome is not as useful. I think that, speaking for the agency, I think we'd like to go back and look at perhaps all of these and be able to identify for the members of the committee those that we can provide additional background information and those that, I mean, without reviewing them right this instant, I don't know that some of them, we may not collect it.
May not have the data, right. Yes.
We would look forward to receiving that information.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Mezzeri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are good measures, I think, and we're on the right direction. But I don't have a sense at all that there's any way we can break down as to which regions or which community colleges are doing a better job in different areas. And I don't know if we can even get to that level, but in some areas, at least for some of the targets, I would hope that we could get a sense if it's working well in the I-5 corridor, but it's not working as well in more rural parts of Oregon. Some of those kind of assessments might be valuable.
Kim, have you got any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Mezzeri, I believe that, again, without dissecting them right this instant, this information primarily comes to us as a roll-up from either the workforce investment areas, the colleges, or a combination thereof. So I would expect that I would hope you wouldn't ask for this tomorrow, so I'm not sure that I could break it all down and deliver it tomorrow, but I do believe that we could get to a more finite level of detail.
Senator, we've requested in a number of different areas that there be that the performance measure on its surface stay the same, but we be given a detail of breakdown of information as we go through these. And it may be worthwhile as you go through and look at the ones that you're able to report on a percentage mm-hmm. by the enrollment in the program of success, that you could also go through and take a look at which ones would be relevant to have some kind of a detailed display mm-hmm. attached to them for the next time the committee takes a look at them, that show the performance by campus, so that, because I think it would be valuable for us to get an idea of which campuses were meeting or exceeding the goals and which ones were challenged in that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That would be.
Any other comments on the performance measures?
I think those are very good, both the addition of campuses and defining them more and telling us exactly what we're measuring, the quality of the completion rates, percentages, and so forth. Excellent.
I agree. I think those are two very good ideas mm-hmm. to add to it. Are there any objections to adopting the performance measures with the amendments that we've discussed? Okay, what I'm going to do then is to... Representative Bates, did you have a comment?
Just real quickly. One of the things you do track is, and I don't see it here, is how well those students who are going on to higher education, community college, fare at the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
And how you track that by site also, by each community college. That would be an interesting indicator for me, both from what kind of grade point average they maintain at higher ed and what the completion rate at higher ed is by individual community college. I've read that data in the past somewhere. I didn't see it here. That might be something you might want to consider as another indicator of how well you're doing.
Do the community colleges actually track forward in time the graduating students?
Madam Chair, yes, they do with the assistance of the university system. We do compile the records together and know that community college students do as well, if not better, than students who start as freshmen in a university and have approximately the same GPA. Following it out even further longitudinally as far as entering employment and wages and things like that, that's a bit more of a stretch. But we do combine records with the university system to know how our students do.
Well, then I know that in the university system there is performance measures that gauge the performance of students that come into the system from two-year universities.
Yes, the information, that's part of the information. What I'm trying to get to is my memory is that students coming in from two universities actually have a significantly higher graduation rate than those just starting the university system, so there's probably a lot of factors involved. I've also seen data outside this building indicates that certain community colleges, which mine is one, appear to do much better once they enter the higher system than others do. And so breaking it down by individual institution might be helpful information also.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates will certainly see what we can gather together.
Yeah, this is a suggestion of something you might want to look at as a goal.
Good suggestion. Okay, any further discussion on performance measure? Well, we have the good senator here filling in for Senator Gordy, and we thank you for your consideration of us today. What I'm going to do then is close the information session on House Bill 5009 and open a work session on House Bill 2193. And this is the technical fix bill that we discussed at the beginning of the session. And the chair would accept a motion to move House Bill 2193 to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. And Representative Smith, would you carry in full and on the House floor?
I would be more than happy.
And Senator Mesley, would you be kind enough to also do that on the Senate floor? I'm taking that as a yes.
most definitely
nodding off.
Close the work session on House Bill 2193 and open a work session on House Bill 5009 and refer the committee members back to the memo. And what I will do here is we will start at recommendation 7. And go forward there because that was where we ended up last time. And the chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on vacancy savings adjustments as outlined in the June 10th memo.
I would move that we pass number 7, vacancy savings adjustment, Madam Chair.
We have Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on compensation increases as outlined in the June 10th memo.
Madam Chair, I'd like to instruct the co-chair that we have a system here in which we go back and forth between the House and the Senate, and Senator Gordley normally follows a good representative, Smith. So it's your position to say, I so move.
I would certainly do that, Madam Chair. Wouldn't want to break with tradition.
We have a motion to accept the LFO recommendation for compensation increases. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. We have a budget note that do we need a separate motion for the budget note, or is that included in?
The recommendation is simply to adopt that budget note.
So yes. We've already, by virtue of adopting your recommendation,
Oh, I see, for compensation increases, yes.
We
I believe that's how you'd interpret that.
Okay, then the chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on self-improvement classes, including the budget note, and as outlined in the June 10th memo.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Motion is carried. The chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on agency operations as it relates to Package 103 in the June 10th memo.
So moved, Madam Chair.
You're getting it.
You got that quick.
Senator Schrader has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? The motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on transfer of the Even Start Family Literacy Program to the Department of Education in Package 105.
I move.
The Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? The motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on non-limited expenditure authority for national emergency grants, which is Package 106.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Schrader has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to put the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 5009 relating to Mount Hood Community College Facility Funds.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. We have chair would accept a motion to approve the performance measures as we have discussed them with the modifications that we've recommended.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Schrader's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. I believe that brings us to the end of our motion making.
Thank you, Mary. Good job. Thank you.
And we are also at the end of our time, so we are scheduled to be in committee tomorrow to hear two bills. And Mr. Bender, do you have any news for us on that?
I don't have any news. I just did want to get a clarification from you whether it was your intent to carry over this bill also tomorrow.
It is my intent to carry over this bill and to hear the agency's discussion that Senator Mesery has asked for. And we could also continue to discuss the issues that were under the review section of the schedule.
Thank you.
So with no further business before the committee, I'll adjourn this meeting and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.